Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. You know my guest today. He's been here many times. He's taught me a lot, and I'm very grateful to my guest, Jack Cashel, for being here today. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Well, Mel, I am honored to be here. And by the way, I mentioned your trip to Kansas City in the foreword of my book. I don't know if you got to see that yet.
Oh, great.
You
No.
You may have skipped the acknowledgement section, but yes.
Yeah. Well,
because when you
I will check it out because I did. I go right because I wanted to get through the book and not a time to see it. So I had to jump ahead.
Right. Who reads the acknowledgements? Well, when I wanted to, just in the way of background, when I had started this project, I really didn't know how to move into this world, you know, the world of January 6th. And you helped me open some doors. So it was very, very helpful.
Yeah. I remember I called you. I was right down the street. I said, do you want to come meet me? You came, you told me what you were doing. And I said, well, I know four people that are working on that, including Ashley Babbitt's mom. So why don't you tell the audience about your book that just came out? It's very, very important. I suggest everyone out there get your copy ASAP. Go ahead, Jack, tell everyone what you've been working on.
Right. The book just came out. We accelerated the schedule. So we skipped the traditional bookstore, blah, blah, blah stuff, and went right to online and BNN, Amazon, et cetera. And it's called Ashley, The Untold Story of the Women of January 6th. And, you know, and it started, like I say, with my conversation with you. I had it after I talked to you, then I emailed Julie Kelly, who's done, of course, yeoman's work on this whole project.
Oh,
I said, is anyone doing a book on Ashley Babbitt? And she said, no. She said, I think that'd be a good project. And then I called, with your help, Ashley's mom, Mickey Widhoft.
Yeah.
I didn't want to proceed without her support and blessing, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have. And I didn't put anything into it then.
Right.
And she gave me the thumbs up. And since then, it's been a roller coaster. I went down the path of trying to find out what happened to Ashley Babbitt. And this is, if we can use our own metaphors, there's a rabbit hole of major proportions. And then it led me to see, and then I followed it all the way into the dark bowels of a massive conspiracy that has not been fully, fully dissected. Although I think, you know, and I'm relying on the work of a lot of other good people like Darren Beatty and Joe Hanneman and all the people who've been working on this.
Yeah, well, you have to. That's how you have to get to this. We don't have an investigative body that's willing to even look at this. They're in on it.
Right. Nick Searcy. It's a nice collaborative effort where you can work what you can use the work of others. And I had the opportunity when you're writing a book and you're sitting down 6 hours a day, putting pieces together.
Oh, yeah.
You begin to see how it all fits together.
Now, what to you, I mean, there's many, many revelations here, but I think to me, the worst part of this was, now you looked into many of the women, but with Ashley Babbitt in particular, the demonization of her instead of all people getting together and immediately being like, oh my God, a young girl was shot, her life was taken, it became not just political, but the people on the other side of this dynamic are still to this day vicious to what that showed of humanity, that everyone wasn't like, oh, even all the way to Nancy Pelosi, you know, when it was her guy. So, you know, to me, I think what it says about humanity in the aftermath, because what did you learn about her that is the opposite of what they were trying to say?
Well, let me just get back up a little bit, maybe tell people about her.
Great.
I will say this as a preface, is that there was a plan, but Michael Byrd, the guy who shot Ashley Babbitt, was not part of it.
In fact,
he screwed everything up in a way I'll talk about in a second.
Great.
Ashley was she grew up in San Diego. She was the oldest and of five siblings, the other four being boys. Real tomboy, was athletic, did everything Southern California girls did. But grew up in a military family. September 11th comes, she joins, signs up, spends 14 years in the Air Force in one capacity or another, you know, assigned to every shithole country in the Middle East, you know, for deployed, I think, 8 times. And virtually all of her work was police work, you know, MP kind of work.
Yeah.
And so she comes back to United States, to California. Mother's thrilled to have her back. She opens a pool supply business with her husband, Aaron. And I examined in the case of all these women, why did they go to Washington in the first place, right? And, you know, I started with that question, why did they go to Washington? And then I answered, when I came back at the end of the day, my answer was, that's not the right question. The right question is, why did the rest of us not go, right?
Right.
That was the patriotic thing to do, is to go to Washington that day, just to have your voice heard, yeah. Just to say, we're not content with what you did with the election of 2020.
Right.
We'll accept it if we have to, but we want you to know that we know.
Yeah. Right.
And so she joined, I don't know, a million other people. Curiously, she, of all the women I profiled, there's 10 of them, 8 of whom survived that day.
Right.
She was the only one who flew, because every single one of the women that I could get information on, the only one I couldn't was Roseanne Boylan. All 9 of the other women were COVID dissidents, hardcore, right?
Right.
And they refused to fly. They didn't want to put up with the indignities at the
right.
airport.
Yeah, I get airport. It. Wow.
I mean, so one woman, one great grandmother I covered, Rebecca Lavrens, she drives from Colorado Springs by herself, right? In the winter. Yvonne St. Cyr drives from Boise, Idaho, 35-hour drive, right? Atlanta and Tennessee, New York, wherever they came from, they all drove.
Wow.
And so Ashley gets there, and just quick, she's by herself. She goes to the speech on the Ellipse, ends at 1:15. There's a story here. She walks like with everyone else down to the Capitol. She arrives, it's a 45-minute walk, roughly, arrives a little after 2, enters the building, admittedly through a broken window. But by that time, that building was filled with people, mostly through open doors or, window. She wanders around, honors the rope lines, She gets to the door of the House floor, where there's a big crowd gathering. And the door is being defended by 5 congressmen, all Republicans, right? 4 of them from Texas, right? And they know these people. They're not afraid of them, right?
Yeah.
They're just telling them to calm down, take your time. Don't be jerks about this, right? But Ashley, as everyone says, is not one to follow the crowd. So she wanders around by herself, finds herself in this corridor leading up to the doors that block the Capitol, the foyer to the House floor. She's followed by an independent journalist named Taylor Hansen, who records this whole event. And she gets there. There are 3 Capitol Police officers guarding the door, facing out. On the other side, the door is barricaded. And she gets there. She's joking with them, because she's police herself. She sees herself in the role of the police,
right?
Not as an insurrectionist. And Taylor Hansen offers them some water. They're joking. And then the crowd comes and they surge behind her. And now the hallway is getting jam-packed. Ashley's like 5'2", 110 pounds. You can get killed in a crowd just for being small.
Right.
She knows that. So then I'm just going to walk through the sequence of events, and then we'll talk about what that triggers. And you know this pretty well, but yeah, your audience may not.
Right.
So Ashley is there. Now the crowd is, and there's some bad actors in that crowd. The one guy who is recording it, becomes semi-famous, Sullivan.
Right.
He's a BLM, who's opportunist. But he's also caught himself in his own video saying, let's burn this place down, blah, 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 And then this other guy comes up, and his name's Zachary Lamb. And he's a convicted of various crimes in the past. He has no social media history tying him to Trump or MAGA, right? Which, they looked, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He starts punching between the cops at the windows behind them on these doors. And the cops don't do anything about it. So then Ashley gets in their face and she goes, do effing something, right? You're the cops, you got to do something. And then call for backup. She's dropping in the occasional F-bomb here and there, than occasional. It's all recorded, right?
Right.
It's not a big mission. And And you know what they do is, so then a lamb stops punching the windows. He just splintered them. He hasn't broken through. He's just punching. Turns around, he faces the crowd. Now it's like he's holding them at bay. At that point, there's no pressure on the cops at all. They just walk away, leave the doors unguarded, right? And then a lamb grabs at this point, he grabs a helmet from some other protester and really starts smashing the windows, right? And breaking windows, breaking them open. And now Ashley's getting, you know, she could see just the frustration, the rage on her face as she's in there. And so at one point, she grabs Alam's backpack with her right hand, pulls him off the door. He spins around, and she's a left-hander, and she punches him in the face and knocks his glasses off, right? Mm-hmm. At which point, people start yelling, "There's a gun, there's a gun." They could see the people on the far side of that quarter could see Michael Byrd's outstretched hand with a gun in it, right?
Oh, wow.
Now, Ashley hears this, and I cannot say for sure what her absolute motives were, but she's in danger of being crushed by a crowd where she knows there's some bad actors. There's a gun, a gun. She doesn't know where the gun is. She doesn't know if it's on her side or the other side, right?
Yeah.
And she had no reason to believe it's on the other side. She probably thinks it's on her side. And so she just jumps up into the window pane, right? And then Michael Byrd, without a warning or anything, with like a half dozen police officers in his line of fire, if he were missed, shoots and kills her. She falls back on the ground. A doctor, protester, comes over to treat her. Police pull him off. She bleeds out and dies. And that wasn't supposed to happen. Now, all these carefully laid plans of this big protest and riot they've sort of engineered as a martyr, as a face. And what could be worse than an attractive, you know, 34-year-old, 35-year-old Air Force veteran, married 14 years, you know, no criminal record, no nothing.
Who was trying to stop a person that was trying to break the windows on top
That's right.
of it.
And you can speculate about better motives, but the one motive you cannot speculate on is that she was leading an insurrection. She was trying to do the opposite of that. She was a military, she's a patriot, she's a police officer, right?
Yeah.
And then to your point earlier, Mel, what is the New York Times? What did the media do immediately afterwards?
Horrible.
Smear her, right?
Ugh.
Immediately.
Still, it's still going on. It's still, you know, yeah. You wrote a great book and you've wrote many pieces on things like this before. But, you know, these smear campaigns against victims, literal victims, it is just unbelievable that everyone wasn't like, oh, you know, but what's crazier is from this point on, it becomes that they memory hole that even happened to her. And if it's brought up, it doesn't really matter because five people were killed by Trump supporters that didn't even die.
No. And that's the next part of this story. But you're right to your point, and because you raised a good point. And that is, what did they do to her? Well, they did to her what they did to Trump. They did to anyone they don't like.
Yeah.
On January 7th, the New York Times has to report this story, partly because Sullivan, the BLM guy, sold his video to CNN, right? And they made the mistake of committing an act of journalism. They would regret it, and they purged everything they ever did. But
right.
So New York Times, by the next day, has dug into her past enough to know that she had an altercation with her husband's ex-girlfriend, or Aaron's ex-girlfriend, right, before they were married. And they had gotten they'd interviewed the other woman and gotten the police file, and not the police file, but the court thing on, and we're publishing it on January 7th, right?
Wow. Oh my God. That's so awful. How disgusting.
And then, but they had a problem on their hands because, and by the way, that same day, the FBI starts an investigation to gather whatever dirt they can get on her, right? But you're having a hard time finding, because, I mean, if you're going to shoot someone, they could not have shot a more inconvenient person. A person, if your public face of this insurrection is an attractive, petite, 14-year military veteran who's married, you know, and comes from a good family, it's a nightmare for them. So what do they do? And this is the most disgraceful part of the whole story. And I'm telling it here for the first time. and you know parts of this, but it's worse than you think. They create their own martyr, right? Now, on January 6th, one of the initiatives I learned by, you know, I interviewed, fortunately, all the women that I chose almost kind of at random to participate, cooperate, which was great.
Right.
One of them was Sarah Carpenter,
okay,
NYPD,
yeah,
retired, medically retired, after a horrific stint at Jen on September 11th. It was more than she could take anymore, like a 9-year veteran. But so she just drives down spontaneously, like virtually all of them do. Insurrection, serious. Most of them hadn't even planned to go the night 2 days before.
Right.
She drives down, you know, goes through her ritual, gets maced and whatnot, walks around, came in an open door, you know, just an ordinary kind of story inside the Capitol. Although she did have some verbal altercations with the police in interesting ways, and only a way a New York cop could have it, you know.
Oh, right.
Because she was too, as a cop, she was saying, "We're the police. Why aren't you, controlling
it?" Right. Yeah. Sure. I get it. Yeah.
And so, she's driving home that evening back to New York City, and she's going up I-95 through Maryland. Says, "Oh, I have a good friend who lives right off the highway here. Maybe I'll call her and stop by and say hello." She calls a friend and says, "And I'm just coming from the Capitol. Blah blah blah, blah." And then a woman freaks out. She starts screaming, as Sarah says, like a rabid dog. And then Sarah says, "What's wrong?" And then a woman says, "You killed a police officer. You killed a police officer with a fire extinguisher." This is on the night of January 6th, right?
What?
And Sarah was utterly, totally shaken. She can never forget the moment. The next day, she was so upset, she couldn't even get out of bed in the morning because she didn't want to be part of a, you know, lethal insurrection, right? And the woman she was talking to, her husband, was a retired Capitol Police officer. So he had heard the scuttlebutt. So in other words, on the night of January 6th, the rumor had already circulated that a police officer was killed by a protester wielding a fire extinguisher. As we know now,
total lie.
Brian Sicknick was walking around well and happy on the evening of January 6th. They catch a break. Let's call them the conspirators. Catch a break on January 7th when Sicknick dies of a series of strokes, utterly unrelated to the events of January 6th. Someone makes the decision. This is where we go from misinformation to disinformation to criminal disinformation.
Yeah.
They make the decision to make Brian Sicknick the victim of this rumored fire extinguisher death.
Yeah. Right?
So in the morning of January 8th, by the morning of January 8th, the New York Times, and praise here to Glenn Greenwald for taking a still shot of the actual paper version of the New York Times on January 8th, because the online versions have been all obliterated. And which they say, and they had this like lurid detail. Brian Sicknick was rushed out of the Capitol on January 6th with the blood gushing from a huge gash on his head, according to two law enforcement officials, right?
Right.
So they exploit his death. They make him a martyr to counter the Ashley story. And then they add this lurid detail. You know, I mean, it's not an accident. This is not... This is a conscious plot. And so then they... To add weight, to add gravitas to this whole proceeding, they have a memorial for him in the rotunda of the Capitol.
I remember.
Not to fault Brian Sicknick. He is not part of this blasphemy that was done by people who were exploiting his death. They have this memorial. The previous person they had the memorial for in the rotunda, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
I know.
That's the level of...
I know. Okay. I remember thinking, what are they doing? What is going on? Like, it was like, and Pelosi, you know, here's the question too, Jack. What you just said is so important. And this goes back to a lot of the different things. And I want people, if you don't know Jack's work, he's like one of the best investigative reporters that really gets to the bottom of who was involved. Like you said earlier, what's the scariest part about this is that people were deciding this, that they sat down. I still believe that there will at some point be justice with a lot of this stuff. I have to believe that. But that people sat down, obviously connected to Pelosi or the orchestrators, and decided to pull this giant hoax. I mean, multiple hoaxes, but over this, this police officer, this was a well-orchestrated, they're having a funeral in the rotunda. How much does that cost? You know,
yeah, like, right. All like burial, you know, like the King of England or something.
Right.
And then they bury him, I mean, his ashes in Arlington, right? It's just blasphemy, right? You are, and again, no fault of Brian Sicknick at all. We would, because they sat on the real autopsy for over 100 days. And Judicial Watch had to force that out of the medical examiner's office.
Right. Well, also you've also broken stories about the medical examiner in D.C. being complicit in Chauvin case.
That's right. Roger Mitchell is the kid. He was the D.C. medical examiner at the time on January 6th, and he was the D.C. medical examiner who threatened to ruin the Minneapolis medical examiner unless he corrupted his autopsy report to make it a neck compression and murder. And he did. He did it successfully. This is a guy who needs to be exposed.
Yeah, I mean, thank God you're exposing this stuff. So, yeah, that Sitnick thing is terrible because, you know, again, people had to sit there and do that. But you think that there was a plot to, like, do what they did, but that Byrd was not part of that. He was just, because he isn't he the guy that also left his gun in the bathroom? Yeah. And there were, like, other things going on. How he had that job, I'm not sure. So what do you think happened there? Do you think he panicked or something?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's odd because I usually defend cops. And in this case, I would not, I hate to say it, but, you know, people on our side are going to say, oh, he's a murderer, he should go. No, I don't think cops should be imprisoned for making mistakes, right? Who should be imprisoned are the people who gave him those jobs, right? He's a lieutenant.
Well, how about what happened after, though? Didn't they go put him in hiding and stuff? I mean, he was complicit after the fact in the cover-up.
Oh, yes. For lying, you know?
Lester Holt making himself seem like a hero.
Right. For 8 months, they hide him, right? They put him at a Joint Base Andrew in some sort of executive suite with his dog, right? Or his cat. I don't know, it was a pet.
Can you imagine? And then he goes on TV like he was the victim.
That's exactly right. And the interview starts with like this. Why were you, why did they conceal you? And Michael Byrd says, you know, he's black. That should, let me just say that. Threats, right? And he says threats. Now, no one even saw him.
And no one knew his name. No one really knew anything.
Only a handful of people even knew he was black.
Right.
You'd have to be a real internet troll to know that. And then you could guess Lester Holt's follow-up question. Racist threats?
I know, exactly. It's so disgusting. Yes. It's so disgusting. Well, you know what, too? Also, I'm sure you followed Steve Baker, you know, the reporter that, you know, how all that stuff about that Dunn guy that just ran the audacity to run for office, and the other cop that that testified with all the tattoos and is like a regular commentator on CNN. I mean, they turned these guys into heroes. Or they tried to, but I mean, it's all falling apart at the same time. So then what happened to Byrd after his, you know, 15 minutes of parading around as a hero and a victim?
He was promoted, right?
Do you know?
That is audacity, you know, that's right. That's in your face, right? We're not only going to not punish this guy. And he was cleared by DOJ, FBI, Capitol Police, et cetera. We're going to promote him, right?
Yeah, I'm telling you. It's a pattern. It's a pattern. I don't know if you saw Ayanna Pressley or whatever. She's sick of white men failing up in D.C. It's like, sit down.
Huh?
Yeah, you know?
Here's Byrd's background. Before this incident, he had been involved. Some teenager stole his car, and he starts shooting at the vehicle.
Oh.
And in the real world, you're fired for that, at least, and especially when you're not a particularly good shot and a couple of your bullets end up in people's houses, right?
Oh, boy.
And then this was significant enough of an offense to make the media. is that sometime before this, he had left his fully loaded Glock in the men's room of the Capitol Center.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have a traditional safety, which meant the kid could have come and picked up and started shooting with it.
Right.
And as he said, oh, I'm not going to be punished. This happened on a Monday. He was back at work on Tuesday. No harm, no foul. Right. Again, you and I were fired.
Unbelievable.
But so he's got a charmed life, part of the whole DEI structure of the Washington, everywhere else for that matter. And now he's a captain.
Oh, God.
And it's, but he's a sideshow. And like I say, when he did what he did, and then he lied about it immediately, sort of, someone's firing shots here. What?
I don't know.
No, you're the one with the gun, Mac. You got the smoking gun. It's you
literally
shots were fired in the building on that day. But they didn't want that to happen. I say the people pulling the strings.
I have a feeling I know who they are. Yeah, of course. So this is a twist in the story. This is why I was waiting for your book, but you're really good at, you know, really figuring out the actual dots that come together. Cause a lot of people speculated that they wanted somebody shot, that they wanted to show violence. So this actually was bad for them.
Yes. That's why they had to switch gears and make Brian Sicknick a martyr also.
What was the evacuation about? Was the evacuation because of the fake pipe bombs? Or was the a lot of people think they were evacuated because of that shooting. So it wouldn't make sense if that was not planned.
Well, they evacuated the House and the Senate because of the mob, you know, that had gotten in the building.
Right.
And they not because the mob first broke through about, I believe, about 2 o'clock. And, you know, and Ashley died at 2:45. And there were, by that time, virtually everyone was cleared. The House floor had only, first of all, a bird lies up and down. He says that, he said the foyer where he was filled with, had Congress people in it, some of whom were disabled. There was no one in there. There were only 5 people on the House floor, and they were guarding the main doors, and 5 Congress people, all 5 Republican men, right? 4
Surprise.
From Texas,
right.
One from Oklahoma, right?
This Democrats, guy never showed remorse, though, did he? Ever?
Well, on TV, he did. He was so coached. He was probably drugged and coached, but he was he knew the questions that were coming, right?
Of course,
it was totally stage managed, just like they stage managed the committee hearings,
right?
Yeah. By the way, the committee hearings were stage managed by the guy who suppressed ABC's Jeffrey Epstein tapes, right? The Amy Kobach tapes.
I'm shocked. It's shocking to me. You know, it's like I tell people, it's a small group of people. It really is. I mean, if you talk about the big picture, that are willing to go to this level, we're watching it right now with the Lawfare people. I mean, they're just, it's a small group, but they can do a lot of damage. So let me ask you, what women, that you talk to, because you talk to a bunch of them, what story surprised you the most, or was the most shocking, or whether it's an outcome or what happened that day?
Thank you for watching the show. I'm so excited that my friend Charlene over at Truth About Cancer is now a sponsor of my show, and she has turned me on to the best skincare cleanser out there. I am so excited. I have found Charlene's Calming Facial Cleanser. If you want your skin feeling refreshed, clean, radiant, and calm, right now, you got to try this cleanser. It is a moment of tranquility in a busy world. It's infused with soothing ingredients, just like Charlize. She always picks all of the best products out there that are toxic-free, that are great for your skin, that give short and long-term benefits, and a facial cleanser that makes me feel like my face is totally cleansed, totally refreshed, ready for whatever I have ahead of me is worth its weight in gold to me. And I'm very excited to announce Charlize Calming Facial Cleanser. You can get a 20% off if you go to the Charlize store right now on anything at the Charlize store. I highly recommend this cleanser. It is the best I've found out there. So go to charlize.beauty/Mel K. Use the code Mel K at charlize.beauty. beauty/Mel K. What are you waiting for? Treat yourself or a loved one to the gift of radiant, clean, calm, beautiful skin that's glowing and that makes you feel good about what you look like in the mirror. Everyone will be stopping you and saying, what are you using? And I am telling you, Charlize Calming Facial Cleanser is a game changer. Go to charlize.beauty/Mel K. Use the code Mel K at the Charlize Beauty Store on anything. But I am telling you right now, this Charlize Calming Facial Cleanser will leave you so happy that you went over there and you started this new regimen. Charlize Calming Facial Cleanser. charlize.beauty/Mel K. Go over there right now. Thank you.
The most shocking story that almost no one knows about. You know, we didn't get into Roseanne Boylan's death. That's another whole, we could do a whole episode on that.
We should.
And I learned a ton about it.
We need to do that episode too. Yeah, go ahead.
The most shocking one that no one knows about is Victoria White. She's a mother of four from Rochester, Minnesota. And she came with some friends and one and her 17-year-old daughter. She got separated from, that happened a lot. These people got separated. And right. When you get separated, especially if you're a female, you're really, you're vulnerable to the crowd.
Right. I mean, disoriented. Yeah.
And you lose control over where you're going. I was just watching, I don't know if you saw this on Netflix, they have a story about the Euro Championship in London in 2020, I believe, where the crowds got out of control. And God help the people get in the middle of those crowds.
Right. Chaos.
Victoria White got caught up in a crowd, and that crowd ends up at the tunnel entrance on the west side. Bizarrely, and this is hard to explain other than you think this is either a trap or just a bit of good luck on the conspirators' part. The people were walking around the Capitol like it was the Grand Central Station. The Capitol Police are serving escorts and, you know, standing. The doors are open.
Yeah.
The Capitol's filled with well-behaved people walking around. Meantime, they're guarding this west tunnel entrance like it was the friggin' Alamo, right? And Victoria White gets caught up in the crowd, gets pushed into that tunnel entrance. And for whatever reason, Victoria had an interesting take on this. I asked her, I said, why do you think they went after the women the way they did, right? And she said they wanted to provoke the men to defend them.
Wow.
And when you look at what happened to the women, to the men who tried to defend Victoria, they're all in prison.
Now, I know right? they are. Yeah.
So she's in this middle of this crowd. You've probably seen these videos. Mm-hmm. But if those people haven't, need to look them up. There is one particular officer who goes after, he's a Metropolitan Police Department officer. He was promoted too. Now I think a commander named Jason Bagshaw. And in a lawsuit that Victoria filed, and it's totally documented by the video evidence, he must have hit her 30 or 40 times with his baton. Jabbed her, struck her over the head.
A man was doing that to a woman on the ground?
Yes, with his baton. No, she was standing up. Bam, 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 bam. She's stuck in this crowd. She can't go anyplace. Meanwhile, another officer is above her spraying pepper spray on her, in her face, right? She's crying. She's lost her shoes. She's lost her jacket.
Well, we know who these people are. And you're saying they've been promoted, these cops?
Bagshaw has, yeah. But the lawsuit Victoria just filed recently. In fact, I was communicating with her attorney just today.
Right.
When you read the lawsuit, and I had seen the video, so it didn't shock me, but then one other officer grabs her, and then I think a female police officer starts pulling her hair back and forth. So she's being ping pong between these officers, stuck in a tunnel she cannot go out of one way or another.
Oh my God.
Until finally she's in such bad, blood is streaming down her face. You know, her hair is a mess. It's finally she's dragged into the Capitol itself by the police. They arrest her actually, but they apprehend her, handcuff her. They take her to the central booking. They don't arrest her. And then they release her into the Washington, D.C. night. It's like 30 degrees, maybe. Shoeless, right? Phoneless, coatless. Bam. Welcome to Washington,
Victoria. Holy cow.
And she has She had to borrow a phone from someone and tried to contact the people she was with. And then they agreed to meet at Union Station because, you know, you can't just drive in there.
Right,
and
I know.
So she had to walk but in the night to get the code.
Oh, my God. That sounds like hell. Oh,
right?
God, this poor woman. She probably has serious stuff.
Only to be arrested later on for, you know, whatever bunch of reasons, you know.
I can't even imagine what a nightmare. Now, a lot of people point to some woman named, I think, Yogananda Pittman. She was one of the people in charge. I see a lot of people talk about her. And then there was also the, I can't remember his name, Sund, I think, the guy that went on Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, right.
So who's responsible? Who, like, where does this lead? Like, because it appears that the Pittman lady, she got, I think, promoted and has a big cushy job at Berkeley. And Sund, I think, was fired or I don't know what happened to him. But
well, you know, that's Steve Sund was the chief of the Capitol Police.
Right.
And I fully believe he's a straight shooter who had been tricked. They maneuvered around him through Pittman, who was another DEI hire, you know. And she was the head of intelligence,
right?
For the Capitol Police. She shared none of the intelligence with Sund. He was led to believe it would be just like another rally. So they'd had a, you know, rally in December and a rally in November, MAGA rallies, right? And the danger of those rallies was the MAGA people had been attacked by Antifa types.
Right.
And which
I think it was the danger that day, too.
Yeah, some of them were wearing tactical vests for that reason, or carrying masks, et cetera. It wasn't to attack the Capitol, it was to protect themselves from the Antifas. But here's what happens to Sund. Nancy Pelosi fires him immediately, right? And I mean, like that day, and then promotes Pittman to be now the new head, right? And it was such a, they do things clumsily. Sometimes we think they're smart. They're not as smart as we think they are.
Right.
But Pittman, then the other officers vote their confidence in Pittman. 95% of them vote no confidence, right? Wow. So they got to get rid of her, right?
Right.
And they land her the job. And I can imagine her application had Newsom and Pelosi's fingerprints all over it.
Oh,
and,
well, look where she went. The Berkeley, California.
Chief of Police, University of California, Berkeley. It's a big job. She's making $350,000 a year. And she sat on the intelligence so that Sun walked into that afternoon blind. Sun started calling immediately for National Guard backup. And that got thwarted both by the Sergeant-at-Arms office through Pelosi.
Right.
And then that was approved only after Ashley Babbitt was killed.
Right.
Then they got stonewalled by the Pentagon.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so the Capitol Guardians, of which Ashley Babbitt had been a member when she was in Washington, shows up at like 6 o'clock for a photo op. And they were horrified at what they were not allowed to do. They should have been there even before anything started, and it wouldn't have, nothing would have happened.
What did you learn that surprised you the most going through all this and looking at it from a 40,000 foot view? You've talked to a lot of these women. They're good women that went there to protest, what they believed in, as we're supposed to be able to do in America. What did you walk away with? This had to have been a psychologically and emotionally taxing journey for you.
Yes, it was. And because I've gotten to know a lot of these women now. I went to the trial of the one, Rebecca Lavrin.
I watched it because of you. Yeah.
And I've been to, the Patriots Corner there outside the. And met Ashley's mom, et cetera. But I would say that. And, you know, there's two big subjects we probably ought to talk about another time because they're too big for, limited conversation. Right. One is the death of Roseanne Boylan. And the other is the 1 o'clock witching hour when all the elements came together.
Right.
Ray Epps, the Kamala being at the DNC, the pipe bomb, et cetera. Those are big topics. Maybe another occasion.
Well, we're going to have to do a 3-part series here. But
But about the women, here is the most fascinating thing.
Yeah.
The only one that I don't have information on this, on her attitude towards this, is Roseanne Boyle. But the other nine women, I know this. Every single one of them was an outspoken COVID dissident, right? For several of them, that's why they all drove. For several of them, it was why they got into politics and campaigning. Wow. They were freedom oriented.
Right.
You know, as I say in the book, unlike the pussy hat wearing women who came to protest Trump's inauguration.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
With all their laundry list of you know, feminine demands, the women of January 6th came as Americans. They didn't come as women. They came with the same demands, the same expectations the men came with. You know, free and fair elections, rule of law, constitutional rights, et cetera. You know, as I said about reproductive rights, well, one of the women had eight children and two others had four children. They had multiple children among them. No one denied them their right to reproduce, right?
Right. Well, I also remember when we were thinking about going, because we're 3 hours away by car, and we thought about, we had people that went. There was a whole group of people that I could have just got in the car and had them pick me up. I would
right,
be
sure.
I wanted to go because I thought, honestly, I thought it was going to be fun.
Yes.
I thought it was going to be fun.
It was fun. This is the weird thing. I remember being depressed that day because the two senators lost in Georgia, but everyone I talked to.
Those MAGA events are so much fun. They really
They were so pleased to be among a sea of people who like-minded people.
They're right. Yeah.
And, you know, for Roseanne Boylan, it was like a coming out party. She had led a pretty problematic life up until that point. And then she was among people, my brothers and sisters, shoulder to shoulder, she says, you know?
Right. I know.
Ashley Babbitt was, as her mother said, she never saw her happier than she was that day, you know, wearing her Trump flag as a cape. And really, she's a pretty attractive girl. And she's, you know, and they're all they were so knowledgeable. So they knew so much more about affairs and events than the women who, the elves, the educated liberal females who are chastising them at every turn, you know?
Yeah. And the whole, you're an insurrectionist. Nobody was thinking that they were going there to turn over an election, including Trump. People were going there because they wanted to stand with people that they agreed with. We'd been so censored, marginalized, kicked off of social media, this and that. You had a chance to go be around. A lot of people at that point still were isolated from family and friends.
That was a big part of it. Right?
And that's what I thought, too. We thought, like, oh, that'll be so much fun. People will be together. You know, it's so insane what they've turned it into. And as you know, and I know, and I'm sure my audience knows by now, they charged every single one of the arrests from January 6th as an independent domestic terror, white supremacy, basically crime, to create the illusion that we have a giant white supremacist problem in America, as Steve Friend told me, the FBI whistleblower. So they also walked away from that with something you've been covering for over a decade, which is that storyline. The systematic racism, the country is filled with white supremacist domestic terrorists. So it gave them that as well.
I mean, right. The media had ample time. I mean, they did this right away to get in there and to comb through the social media histories of these women, these 10 women, not a racist trope among them. Right. The women were less appalled at being called insurrectionist than they were at being called white supremacist. One woman, Victoria White, we just talked about, has four interracial daughters, right? I mean, she's with black father. And what,
I didn't understand calling those people racists and bigots. And I'm thinking, wait, I've had on two black January 6th people. There were plenty of black and Hispanic and Asian, and it was everything. That actually was what it's supposed to look like you know?
And what they found was one guy with a Confederate flag, right? And he was the poster boy for the insurrection. And they found a guy with a Camp Auschwitz t-shirt on, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Now, I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but, and the judge didn't know. He says, I have no idea why he wore that shirt. And this guy was threatening to sue Nancy Pelosi for calling him a white supremacist. It may have been a protest against the Holocaust, or, you know, I mean, against the...
It might have been a protest against totalitarianism or whatever.
Right, that's right.
You can turn it into whatever you want. All I know is that that's still legal in America today. What is very scary is the aftermath, but what's even scarier is, I'll tell you what, I'm sure you're following it too, but Graves and these other, and these judges, what they are doing to these people is, I saw your, we'll put a link to it. I saw your column this morning. It is, you know, what's happening to Trump is one thing and it's disgraceful, but what is happening to these people in that DC court, it is just, I don't even know how these people live with themselves, these judges and prosecutors. And I mean, can you even, what's your take on all of that?
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, one of our guaranteed constitutional right is the right to an unbiased jury. And they boast about their 100% conviction rate before juries. And
the FBI puts up congratulations to themselves, the FBI, on Twitter every time. DOJ.
Let's say you have 100% rate of denying change of venue to your 1,350 arrestees and a 99% conviction rate in a district that gave Trump 5% of its vote in 2020, an improvement from the 4% of a vote he got in 2016. This is the Scottsboro boys. The left used to be in favor of making sure people got their constitutional rights. They made movies about themselves, like 12 Angry Men and To Kill a Mockingbird. And they made plays about the Scottsboro boys. But it's a fraud. It's all fraud.
Well, you brought up the ACLU, put out a statement against them.
The ACLU statement.
Funded
as
by
I say,
Soros.
What's that?
It's funded by Soros, of course. But
yeah, right. As I said in the book, it's as if to read the ACLU statement is as if to have read the statement by the ancient Rome ACLU about the Visigoths and the Vandals running through.
Exactly. I read it because you put it in your column, and I thought, yeah, but it also sounds like it was already written. It doesn't sound like they're talking about. That's why the whole thing with all of this stuff, just like Nancy Pelosi's daughter and son-in-law filming a documentary on the street the night before, and then the videos that came out that day. Like with everything else, Jack, I don't think we should be going forward without figuring out what's going on again. I feel like we've done this so many times, be it JFK or any of the assassinations, any of these big events. Like, I feel like we're past that America needs to really deal with our, as you know, I have a book coming out, Americans Anonymous, where I use the sick is our secrets word that isn't a recovery term, because they say, you know, people are, once they get out their secrets and air their, their grievances and then make amends, that then they can start to heal. I feel like we have to do that as a nation right now. And in my opinion, the January 6th from beginning to end is a Hollywood production. Just like I can tell you who on any film that I've ever worked on in 20 years, who was at the table when there was a pitch, and who was at the table when the budget was set up, and who led the teams that actually showed up on set 2 months later to shoot the movie. There are people that orchestrated this, and I really hope that they're held accountable. Any thoughts on that for you?
No, I started it as a skeptic, and that, from that perspective, I try not to jump to conclusions.
Right.
But at the end of the day, and I hate that phrase, but I use it all the time.
So do I
don't hate the phrase, just use the one.
Yeah.
It's such a useful phrase. Forgive my cliches here, but there are several things that gave the game away. You know, several things that happened that showed, I don't think there was a single puppet master. But there was enough separate entities working towards the same ends that it comes off as an inside job. And the problem was for the conspirators is that they were stepping on each other's toes in interesting ways. And I'll just drop one here for now. We'll get into it some other time.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris showing up at the DNC.
No, I know. Patrick Beatty's reporting on that is just ridiculous. It's just so sad and pathetic that how far they've gone to continue down this road. Or I'm sure you've seen the video of, like, there's clearly somebody walking by at the time they're supposed to be. But my question to you then is, after all of this, if it was orchestrated, what was the goal?
Thank you for watching the show. I hope you're enjoying it. I'm very excited because I have a new sponsor, and she happens to be my good friend, the great Charlene Bollinger. She taught me the truth about cancer. She's done amazing documentaries. I even was in one, and she has a great line, the Charlie's Beauty line, and this amazing revitalizing breath of life toner is a game changer for your skin. If you're tired of your skin routine and you're looking to elevate your self-care experience, this is the pinnacle of luxury. Like with everything she does, it's crafted with precision and care, and it's a testament to the power of indulgence. Infused with a blend of nourishing botanicals, it's designed to revitalize, rejuvenate your skin. It leaves you radiant and glowing. And like with everything they do, it is toxin-free and it is a gift to your skin. It's an amazing also gift if you'd like to give the gift of beauty to somebody else that is looking for a change. It's Charlie's Breath of Life Toner. It's a transformative experience, mind, body, and soul. Everything she does is for all of that. So head to charlize.beauty/Mel K. That's charlize.beauty/Mel K, or click the link below and use the code Mel K and head over there right now because they're offering 20% off with the code Mel K at the Charlize store for anything you want there. It is a limited time offer, so please go there right now and elevate your skincare routine. Treat yourself to luxury you deserve and experience the difference of Charlize revitalizing breath of life toner. Your skin will thank you. Thank you so much. And back to the show.
The goal, I think of all the conspirators is the same, basically to disgrace Donald Trump and kill the MAGA movement in the womb. They almost succeeded, except I think they got clumsy and they left fingerprints, made mistakes. We've got 6 months to point out what those mistakes were and to show what they did. And if every Republican I talk to, a political person, I said, make January 6th your issue. Yeah. Don't let them, but your issue. This is the single greatest injustice against American citizens since the Japanese internment. You arrest 1,350 good American citizens, and the worst case, they're like broken windows, and you put them in jail, 500 of them in jail, some of them without a trial. It's disgraceful.
Some of them for 20 years, some of them that weren't there. And worse than that, they're all going to be labeled domestic terrorists for life if we don't do something about this. It is so egregious and disgusting and very sad. And, you know, we're at a point where, I talk about the Arendt thing where she says about it's easiest for a totalitarian nation to take over a people when everyone believes everything and nothing at the same time and thinks everything is possible and nothing is true. Right. Well, where we are right now, we have to start looking at what is true, because what you just said is important. We have an election coming up. You see what they're doing. I see the whole lawfare team, all the seditious traitors. They have all these plans just in case Trump wins. They have this new, this debate thing, but whatever. But whatever the case may be, they're already signaling that DC will go up and, will be a whole nightmare again. So you would think that they would be working right now to actually get to the bottom of what happened there to make sure it doesn't happen again. And, and I guess, like you said, to the Republican people out there, I don't know how many are really Republicans at this point or just in the, uniparty blob, but whatever the case may be, people should want the answers. Now there's one guy, I think Loudermilk, is that who that is? There's one.
Yeah.
One guy working on this, but I haven't really seen much else. And then I saw like some of the stuff about the Pentagon and the stand down and not. Do you think that there's going to be any progress in this coming forward? I think your book probably will because people know if Jack Cashel's coming, you better watch out and have your story right.
You know, it's odd. I mean, Julie Kelly's sort of definitive book was the January 6th book. But I think this is the first serious attempt to put everything in place. Yeah. And I had the advantage of a short distance window between my final deadline and the book's publication. Right. So I was able to incorporate all the Darren Beatty stuff.
Good.
On the dogs and the Capitol and on the DNC. Right now there's nothing that's happened that's not in the book. So I think it's just, I don't have all the answers, obviously. But I do have all the questions, right?
Right, and these were all good women that were there that day for the right reasons, and really ended up being victims, in my opinion, and used terribly used and abused by the system for a goal that had nothing to do with truth or justice. as far as we can see at this point. So Jack Cashel, go ahead.
Here's the beautiful thing. One beautiful, nice note to end on.
Great.
Not all eight of these women.
Yeah.
Proud to have been there that day and don't regret it.
Well, doesn't that tell you everything you need to know? I know that that's great. And I hope that I know that you did them justice and that after talking to you and meeting you, they were happy to have you tell their story, but it hasn't been told enough. And I'm so grateful that you got out there. And how many women did you profile? 10?
10, two of whom obviously did not survive the day.
Yeah.
The woman who I didn't mention who's in since the one outlier, the eight is Dr. Simone Gold.
Okay.
Who was a leading COVID dissident. And
right. Yeah, I know her.
But she otherwise was just like these other women. I mean, and what's tragic about it in some cases, especially the women who were alone or came by themselves, came from unsupportive communities,
right?
Like the ones from big cities,
right?
They had their lives ruined, you know,
ruined. I just had a friend that's been on the show a couple of times, got out yesterday, Kirsten. I talked to another guy that's in there all the time. He says the same thing. He would do it again. You know, that you just don't do nothing is what he always says when he comes on.
Right.
So that's important to know.
I shouldn't have broken that window, but otherwise everything I do was going to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, this is an important book at an important time. And we got 6 months also on the bigger picture to kind of figure out what really happened there, because they're going to use this the whole time. It's all going to, I mean, you hear it every time that they talk about MAGA. And then that's why I wanted to go, because every Trump rally, anything I've gone to like that was really fun and festive and patriotic and all of that. Now people are scared to do that. Also, I think another thing that January 6th was about was making sure that we never do feel comfortable redressing our grievances in a group environment. Now, you know, Ray's out there threatening or saying like warning all big groups that we shouldn't be gathering in big groups. They're even trying to put in legislation that we're not allowed to gather and protest at this point off of January 6th. Well,
shout out to my Garden Staters, fellow Garden Staters, 100,000 of you guys show up.
I know. Cool. Tell everyone where to find you, how to find the book. Everyone get the book right now. Read it, share it around. This is going to be a big topic. So why don't you be the expert in this story and share it with people you know. Go ahead, Jack Cashel.
The way to get it, I hate to do this because I buy through Barnes & Noble. It's available at Barnes & Noble. But I'd go to Amazon because that's where people keep score. You know. Publishers keep score. I just look up my name, Jack Cashel, or look up at Jack Ashley, whatever. And then my website is cashel.com, and I'm at Jack Cashel on Twitter and Jack Cashel on Facebook. I use my real name everywhere, so yeah. I'm that foolish.
As long as we're there, I don't know how long social media will be kicking, but follow Jack everywhere. Definitely go to cashel.com, sign up for his newsletter. He puts out columns regularly all over the place. And thank you, sir. Your work is phenomenal and extraordinary. Very grateful.
No, thanks. Without people like you, I couldn't have even gotten started on this project. So
thank you so much. We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkayshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now. From our farms to your family, all organic protein, fruits, vegetables, gut health, immune support, and so much more. We have products for weight loss and collagen and muscle building, products for children, athletic performance, and 30-day programs for just $12 a day. You can save $50 on your first purchase of $75 or more with the code MelKWellness. Go to the MelKShow.com partners page and check out MelK Superfoods today. Thank you for watching the show. You know, I'm always looking for solutions, and there's one thing that I stress all the time. We have three things that really, really count in this fight to save America: our time, our money, and our vote. Well, every time you spend your money at one of the big box stores or one of the multinational corporations, you are giving them money to fund the
controlled demolition of America. They do it through foundations and other means to make sure that our country is divided and not strong and not united. So what you need to do is you need to find a better way to invest in America with your dollars. I have found a solution. If you go to the partners page at themelkayshow.com and click on Set Me Free, Please. Yes, go to the partners page at melkayshow.com. Click on Set Me Free, Please. It's time to make sure that your money is going towards saving America. It's going towards freedom and liberty and independence and away from centralization, control, and the multinational corporations that are running the public-private partnership that is destroying our country. So again, go to the partners page at themelkayshow.com, click on Set Me Free, Please, and get started today.